The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Well, first of all, I think the drilling off the coast over time has to end up being phased out. We have to provide alternatives.
Number one, no more subsidies for fossil fuel industry. No more drilling on federal lands. No more drilling, including offshore. No ability for the oil industry to continue to drill, period. Ends.
Would you close down the oil industry?
By the way, I would transition from the oil industry, yes.
Oh,
I would
that's
transition.
A big statement.
It is a big statement.
That's a
because
big statement.
I would stop.
Why would you do that?
Because the oil industry pollutes.
She'll stop the rape of our great federal lands by the oil companies.
These rising fuel prices in fossil fuels tell us why we've got to double down on diversifying our fuel supply to go for clean.
We're working through an energy transition, and we've got to start by adding energy. And the reality is we have to take some time to get off of oil and gas. We recognize this. This is a transition.
And in the longer term, we will reduce our reliance on oil as we shift to clean energy.
Families that once they own that electric vehicle will never have to worry about gas prices again.
Is the fact that we need to reduce our dependence on foreign oil, on oil in general, and we need to look at other ways of process of having energy in our country and others.
Is there a need to reduce our reliance on oil? The Europeans need to do that. We need to do that. If we do more to invest in clean energy, more to invest in other sources of energy, that's exactly what we can do to prevent this from happening in the future.
I'm not for drilling on public lands.
The best thing we can do is reduce our dependence on fossil fuels.
So the people from rural to suburban to urban communities can all benefit from the gas savings of driving an EV.
So this is why increasing production is really an increasing clean energy, transitioning to clean energy are the solutions.
It's simply not true that my administration or policies are holding back domestic energy production. That's simply not true.
The last comment there was from just this week. The montage is what led up to the election steal in 2020, and there are probably some statements after that as well. But here's Joe Biden this week saying, hey, my policies, they're not driving prices up at all. This is all part of their plan. This is what they want. They want skyrocketing energy prices so that they can move everything over to green energy, clean energy, electric vehicles. You've been hearing that a lot too. Get an electric car. Pay $55,000 for an electric car and everything's solved. We've got a lot to get to on today's program. You're listening to Stephen Flurry. This is the Trumpet Daily. We're glad to be back in our Ed Stone studio. Busy day of travel today from Jerusalem here to the UK. And I'm coming to you now from the studio that Richard Palmer, of course, uses when he subs in. We've had quite a few subs over the past week because of the travels. So we certainly appreciate their efforts. Sam Livingston, Dwight Falk, Andrew Loker, a lot of people have been helping out in so many different ways. And of course, a lot of these same people help behind the scenes when I'm out in front of the camera as well. So we certainly do appreciate everyone's efforts. We're appreciative too of our broadcast partner, CRN Digital Talk Radio. That's Channel 3 on their platform to get to the live audio stream of this this program. And of course, to get to the live video stream of the show, you've got to go to our website. That's at thetrumpet.com. Just go to thetrumpet.com/live and you get to the live video. So many things happening. Today's March 11th, of course. It's the 33-year anniversary of God revealing Malachi's message. That's what really got the whole work started. And we entered into a time of no more delay. Richard Palmer had a program earlier this week on how that Bible prophecy is just accelerating in every respect. And you see it with respect to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. That's 2 weeks in now. And there were reports yesterday in some of the news stacks that I went through of Russia bombing this maternity hospital. So just this indiscriminate bombing now that's going on in Europe. Right in Europe. We'll get to quite a lot of that in just a bit. And also, I'll try to update you in the second segment about some of the dealings of the past week in Jerusalem. If you didn't see yesterday's show, Sam Livingston hosted it, but we did have, I think, about a 20-minute interview between me and Brent Noctegal, and we talked a little bit about the Jerusalem project, the excavations coming up, and just some of the meetings that we've had this past week. So if you'd like to view that, just go to the podcast that we posted yesterday. So following that statement that Joe Biden, the fake president, said earlier this week that his policies don't have anything to do with these skyrocketing prices. Gas is it's as expensive as it's ever been in the history of the United States. It's more expensive than ever. And he would have you to believe, Joe Biden, that it's all Vladimir Putin's fault. He actually said as well this week, we're approaching a record level of oil and gas production in the United States. I mean, we're just producing at record levels, he says. He's just lying. They're all lying. And this is what they want. This is what they want. They want higher energy prices because it furthers their political agenda. Listen to Barack Obama. This is from 2009, clip 6.
Under my plan of a cap and trade system, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket. Even, you know, regardless of what I say about whether coal is good or bad, because I'm capping greenhouse gases, coal power plants, you know, natural gas, you name whatever the plants were, whatever the industry was, they would have to retrofit their operations. That will cost money. They will pass that money on to consumers.
It's necessary. It'll necessarily skyrocket under my plan. Costs for energy right across the board, because we've got to retrofit everything to start producing clean energy. You have to put clean in quotes, of course, because when you get into it, and there's been several documentaries on this, when you get into what it takes to produce, you know, wind power, solar power, it's very dirty, really. That's the little known truth with respect to these people that are on this green wave. This serves their purpose. As I say, it's what they've always wanted. And so on the one hand, they're celebrating, but on the other hand, they know that Americans are very unhappy right now with these costs at the pump. And so it's very convenient for them to say, well, that's Vladimir Putin's fault. Before that, it was COVID's fault. Before that, they'd talk about, hey, we're doing great. Gas went down 2 cents. But now look at it. It's going up like 10, 15 cents per week. Per week. Listen to Joe Biden's economic advisor. This was earlier this week as well, saying the quiet part out loud. Clip 3.
The only viable path to energy independence for the American economy is to reduce the energy intensity of our economy overall, and ultimately to reduce it to zero and get ourselves to a position where we're no longer reliant on fossil fuels. That's a long-term project, but what we're seeing today and the geopolitics and the economic pain should only reinforce our efforts to try to move there more quickly.
So the goal in the end is to just eliminate fossil fuels entirely. Entirely, this $1.5 trillion monstrosity passed just this week in Congress. $100 billion for Green New Deal policies. They're moving along at a lightning-like pace. America under attack, just like it says in our booklet. Of course, we've been on this subject for quite some time. Listen to this montage of all the Biden people, the Joe Obama people, blaming everything, conveniently enough, on Vladimir Putin. Clip 4.
We're going to go up. Can't do much right now. Russia's responsible.
Americans are paying a higher price at the pump because of the actions of President Putin. This is a Putin spike at the gas pump.
Since Putin began his military buildup on Ukrainian borders, just since then, the price of the gas at the pump in America went up 75 cents. And with this action, it's going to go up further. I know there's a lot of... I know there's a lot of questions.
but there's a lot more that has to be made clear, and I'm going to hold on that till we get more information. Thank you. Appreciate it.
A lot of questions, but I'm not going to be taking them right now. And so he moves on, talks about the spike in fuel prices since Vladimir Putin invaded Ukraine. What about the spike that's happened since November 3rd, 2020? It's more than doubled because of his policies. Yes, indeed. And they were proud of it coming into the election, after the election. But now they see how many Americans are unhappy. So they come out with the big, we're not going to import any energy from Russia. I think Russia supplies about 7% of America's energy. And then you have the Biden people going to Venezuela, Saudi Arabia, Iran, trying to get more energy from these nations, of all things, and not doing anything, basically, to make it easier for Americans to drill in North Dakota, in Alaska, in Texas, wherever. America was energy independent. Just a little over a year ago, under the administration of Donald Trump, and gas prices were going down. But look at America today. I mean, when you think of America under attack, just that alone, the fact that the Joe Obama people would go to Venezuela and Iran for help and not help American drillers, American companies, that says a lot right there. You know that America is under attack. As I say, before Putin, Putin's the new COVID, because before Putin, it was, well, COVID is to blame. That's the reason. The lockdowns, the COVID, that's causing prices to go up. Now it's Vladimir Putin. It's pretty amazing to see, as if buying electric cars is going to solve everything. Where would you fill them up? Well, they've got a plan for that as well. By the way, Donald Trump, he predicted in 2020 that if Biden was president, gas prices would hit upwards of $7 per gallon. Donald Trump said that. And you know what else he said to Germany and to all of Europe? Don't be reliant on Russia for oil. You should be buying oil from the United States. You don't want to be dependent on Russia. This is from the Daily Mail. It says here, Donald Trump claimed on Wednesday, this was from a podcast, I guess, he claimed on Wednesday that he sent former German Chancellor Angela Merkel a white flag as a gift when she made a deal with Russian President Vladimir Putin on the Nord Stream 2 natural gas pipeline. In other words, he sent, this is according to what Trump did, and again, there's footage of him confronting European leaders. So it's probably true. Maybe he's exaggerating. Who knows? But he sends Angela Merkel a white flag, basically saying, you're surrendering to Russia, and now look at where we are. Well, there's a lot more to this story, as we've covered only on this program. Germany rearming now, it gives them a perfect excuse to build the military. The fact that, well, Putin's on the march. We've got to defend ourselves. And every angle of this story with respect to the United States, I mean, look at how pathetic and pitiful the United States looks on the world stage right now. Nobody trusts the United States. By the way, speaking of tomorrow's news today, as we often do on this show, Jack Posobiec, he tweeted out earlier this week, the economic world war has already begun. Where have you heard this before? Well, at the Trumpet magazine, this is from April 2017. It says, the Bible prophesied that this is how World War III would start. Is global trade war about to suddenly turn humanity upside down? Really, this is the beginning. The trade war that we're seeing all over the world. You're seeing Russia and China drawing closer than ever before. You're seeing Europe, European nations looking to Germany, not the United States, but Germany now. And all of these people making a mad dash for energy. It says here, this is the Trumpet in 2017, 5 years ago we wrote this. It says, the world trade order is currently being reconfigured in an astonishing way. This transformation is already impacting trade relations and facets of some economies. It says, but soon it will significantly impact every national economy, every national government, and every major international relationship. It says the political and geopolitical ramifications will be extraordinary. Yes, you heard it at the trumpet first. Tomorrow's news today. If you haven't subscribed, make sure you go to our website and subscribe. There you can see the cover of that 2017 issue. Go to thetrumpet.com and subscribe to The Trumpet Magazine. There's no cost or obligation. We don't expect anything from you except your address so we can send it to you. Comes out every month. And a lot of the articles, of course, they appear at our website as well, thetrumpet.com. And I'm just getting more and more emails, too, from people saying, you know what, I don't even pay attention to the major mainstream news outlets anymore. Or I see news entirely different than ever before because of what I've been reading at thetrumpet.com, because of what I've been listening to on The Trumpet Daily or on the Key of David program. Coming back to the Joe Obama and the cover that the communist news networks are giving to him, as per usual. I mean, they are in full bloom as far as covering for the communist agents. USA Today, yes, gas prices are soaring, but it's a necessary sacrifice for Americans to stop tyranny. Now, all of a sudden, we're very concerned about tyranny. We've got to stop Vladimir Putin. How is it that these sanctions, or whatever you want to call them, how is it that they're hurting Americans more than they're hurting the Russians? This is unbelievable. And then the press comes along and says, hey, this is a good thing. We're prepared to sacrifice. I could pay $15 a gallon for gas, says the comedian. Because he drives an electric car, he doesn't care. This is from that USA Today piece. But Biden and his team, who have handled this crisis so masterfully so far. Can you believe this? From the USA Today, the nation's newspaper, saying that Joe Biden has handled the Ukraine crisis masterfully. Unbelievable. You can't make this up. CNN. This was from a CNN panel. Many politicians act as though it's President Biden who caused inflation and he can fix this. So it's not Biden's fault. Nobody can really fix this. You just got to deal with it, America. You've just got to pay $6, $7 per gallon and get used to it. CNN, another commentator. There's also a lot of misinformation about who or what is responsible. No one person is responsible for the price of oil. You think they'd be saying this about Donald Trump if the cost per gallon was $7? America under attack. They're calling it, at the Joe Obama White House, they're calling it Putin's price hike. You heard there from Joe Biden how that since Vladimir Putin did what he did. How about since November 3rd, 2020? Jen Psaki, she's the chief propagandist at the White House. She said, you may have noticed this week that our gas prices have gone up. A lot of it has to do with Vladimir Putin. It's all Vladimir Putin. Putin, Putin, Putin. He's to blame. He's the cause. Listen to this from, well, let me just give you one more quote. It's not, this is New York Times. It's not President Biden's policies that's causing this, as Republicans claim. Listen to this clip from CNN, clip two.
That could have a significant ripple effect on the global energy market, then pushing prices here at home at the pump a lot higher, Kate. But as you mentioned, people we've spoken to over the last couple weeks, they're okay paying higher prices if it means holding Russia accountable for what they are doing in Ukraine.
Right. We're totally fine with it. We love it. Americans love paying higher prices at the gas station. This is what this commentator says. 70% of Americans say, hey, open it up so that we can drill ourselves so that we're not dependent on Russia or anyone else. Joe Obama is going to Venezuela, Iran, Russia, or whoever. And meanwhile, they can't drill in North Dakota. They can't drill on government land in Alaska. And these are policies that Joe Obama established on day one. Day one, he comes in. He says, "Nah, we've got to get on board with AOC's thinking. It's all about the Green New Deal." These policies are crippling the United States, and it's just as you would expect if the United States is under attack, a communist attack. America under attack. Amid all of this, record levels of inflation. You saw the figure probably 7.9% just the other day. record level inflation, highest gas prices in history. And here comes Congress to the rescue. They've got a $1.5 trillion spending package. Never mind record levels of inflation. Never mind the fact that dollars are becoming worthless. $1.5 trillion. And they came together quickly on this package with bipartisan support. Everyone's a sellout. That's what this legislation should tell you. Republicans, Democrats alike. $14 billion for Ukraine. And a lot of the congressmen, quite proudly, they came out and said, hey, well, one reason this came together so quickly, one reason that we were able to put together so much aid for Ukraine is because get so much aid together quickly is because of Ukraine. We're really concerned about Ukraine's borders. It started out as $1 billion in aid. Then the Democrats said, hey, let's get it up to $10 billion. Then Mitch McConnell, he's the Republican, he says, no, let's get it up to $14 or $15 billion. These are all the same people who could not find one penny for America's border wall security at the American border. They couldn't give Donald Trump one penny to build a wall for American security. And here Ukraine happens, and they rush to the defense of Ukraine for all the wrong reasons. And I mean, you look at this story, certainly there's prophetic implications that run right through it with respect to the Prince of Rosh. And by the way, there's even some news outlets referring to prophecies in Ezekiel. I mean, this is where you heard it first. It's not a lot of them. But a few people have emailed me saying, yeah, there's some Bible people that believe that what Putin is doing is prophesied. Well, it is. He is on the march. It's as Richard Palmer said on Wednesday, these prophetic prophecies that we talk about on this program, it's like they're on turbocharge, as he said over and again. Pretty amazing what we're witnessing. But then you look at Ukraine and you look at America's policies and you look at the corruption and the number of people in Congress that are being paid off by these rich oligarchs, whether it's in Russia or in Ukraine or in China. This is from The Hill. It says Senate Minority Whip John Thune. Now, he's a Republican from South Dakota. He said ahead of the text unveiling, this is this $1.5 trillion monstrosity. He said that he expected the bill to fetch robust bipartisan support. I would expect a fairly robust vote. This is quoting Thune. Bipartisan vote. And a lot of it has to do with, again, just a sense of urgency of getting assistance to Ukraine. We're not talking about getting assistance to American vets or those that are suffering because thugs are coming across the border and murdering and raping Americans. We're not talking about getting assistance to the southern border at all. But I mean, if it's about another nation far away from the United States, and I'm not suggesting that the U.S. shouldn't take an interest in what's happening abroad, but as America goes up in flames, this is what Congress is doing. This is what really gets their attention. This is what really gets them moving. They're not concerned about the crime in American streets. They're not concerned about opening up or removing so many of these regulations so that America can be energy independent again. They're not concerned about it. They're not concerned when Black Lives Matter tears down cities, loots stores. They're not concerned that 2 million illegals just come streaming across the border. That's not urgent. But it's like they were outbidding each other on Ukraine. First, it starts as a billion. Then there's the Joe Obama people. Let's make it 10 billion. Then here's the Republicans. Let's make it 15 billion. Well, why stop at 15 billion? This is from Breitbart. It says a Republican study committee messaging document obtained by Breitbart found the bill has many issues, including $100 billion for Green New Deal initiatives, $100 million for environmental justice activities at the EPA, $26 billion in food stamp funding, increases the National Institutes of Health, I guess that's Fauci's groups, by 10%. They got to increase their budget because they're using their money so well to support the work in Wuhan And now all these biolabs we're hearing about in Ukraine, of all places. It says here at Breitbart, Heritage Foundation found the bill would send taxpayer funds to Planned Parenthood. The bill would exacerbate our out-of-control spending, it's quoting some guy, some watchdog group, at a time when the national debt would dramatically increase the deficit, leaving a massive bill for our children to pay. This says here again, 6 months into the fiscal year, Nancy Pelosi released a 2,700-page bill in the middle of the night and gave members less than 24 hours to read it. Do you think these people care about inflation? Do you think they care about rising costs of fuel? It says finally, Congress must fund the government in a responsible and appropriate manner by returning to regular order and going through the committee process. That's someone who, again, is a watchdog saying, look, we don't even have time to read any of this. But they just force it on through. Another $1.5 trillion in spending, even as inflation is out of control. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about those U.S. biolabs. I think Sam talked about this a little bit yesterday on the show. But we'll get into that before we conclude today's show with a Bible study. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
So a couple of weeks ago, there were some reports that the United States had funded or had been funding for a number of years these biolabs in Ukraine. And the USA Today, we had a good quote from them in the first segment. They decided to fact check this. And they said the claim was false. There's no biolabs in Ukraine, said the nation's newspaper. This is a quote from that piece. It says, the labs are owned and funded by the Ukrainian government. According to the Security Service of Ukraine, the country's main security agency, that agency and the U.S. Embassy in Ukraine have said the claims of U.S. labs is false. Well, our embassy in Ukraine said it's false. So we're to believe what they say, right? This is the same embassy that was largely responsible for the first impeachment of Donald Trump and the dirty dossier. And you think about Ukraine and all the corruption that's there, that the Bidens were involved in, the Pelosis, the Romneys, all of them. Just making $80,000 a month that Hunter Biden was taking in from Burisma. Pretty amazing. Anyway, as Sam played for you yesterday, there was this interesting exchange between Marco Rubio, the senator from Florida, and Victoria Nuland. She's the Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs. Listen to this question that Rubio asked her. I think this was from Tuesday or Wednesday of this week, clip 8.
Does Ukraine have chemical or biological weapons?
Ukraine has biological research facilities, which, in fact, we are now quite concerned Russian troops, Russian forces may be seeking to gain control of. So we are working with the Ukrainians on how they can prevent any of those research materials from falling into the hands of Russian forces should they approach.
I'm sure you're aware that...
It's a pretty simple question. Does Ukraine have chemical or biological weapons? And you would expect her to give an emphatic no, and she doesn't say no. She talks about it does have this research program, these bio labs or whatever. And whatever they're doing, whatever research they're doing, she is concerned about the Russians getting control of it. Why would she be, if it's just good research, if it's just there to help prevent some kind of maybe it's working on vaccines so that we can be protected from another COVID wave. And if so, what would be so sensitive that she would come? Well, if you saw the news as it played out after she made these remarks, I mean, it was full-scale damage control coming from the State Department, the White House, Jen Psaki, all of them rushing to her defense and really rushing to change her testimony. But you heard what she had to say. And Marco Rubio, for his part, I think he was expecting her to give the emphatic no. Here again, it's the uniparty. They all think the same way. If the Ukraine embassy says it's not so, well, then surely it's not so. I mean, after all, the USA Today fact-checked it. No wonder people can't trust major news agencies or even government agencies, for that matter. Here are all of these, and Russia's testifying, I guess, before the UN as we speak. Evidence that they're turning up. Now, who are you going to believe? You can't believe Russia. But look at the United States. Look at the lies that we're just treated to lies after lies after lies constantly. This is the last part of that exchange that made the rounds on social media, this exchange between Rubio and Victoria Nuland, clip 9.
I'm sure you're aware that the Russian propaganda groups are already putting out there all kinds of information about how they've uncovered a plot by the Ukrainians to release biological weapons in the country and with NATO's coordination. If there's a biological or chemical weapon incident or attack inside of Ukraine, is there any doubt in your mind that 100% it would be the Russians that would be behind it?
There is no doubt in my mind, Senator, and it is classic Russian technique to blame on the other guy what they're planning to do themselves.
That's pretty amazing. That's classic Russian technique. None of us would ever do something like that. Isn't it amazing that they are so sure that Russia's engaged in this false flag operation? If there's a bio attack, it's going to be Russia behind it. Certainly wouldn't be anyone else. They know all about false flag operations, but then you talk to them about false flag operations in the United States, January 6th, for example, and it's a conspiracy theory. There's no way it could happen. What was the quote or the soundbite? It was that Project Veritas revelation from earlier this week. Remember the New York Times guy? He's there basically saying, oh yeah, there were feds all over the place on January the 6th. And he was making fun of these reporters that said it was so scared. It was so dangerous. He was saying, come on. And this is the New York Times admitting in private that it's all a hoax. It's just a big hoax. He's admitting to Project Veritas that it was a false flag operation brought to you by the Department of Justice, brought to you by the FBI. But there she is, saying the quiet part out loud initially. And then as Marco Rubio even tries to clean it up a little bit, she assures you that, look, if anything bad happens in Ukraine, it's Russia's fault. Well, that's probably true in many ways. But these people, the Ukraine embassy, the American embassy in Ukraine, the corruption at the highest levels of government in every nation. It is. It's like Richard said the other day. It's turbocharged. So many of these prophecies, we're watching them be fulfilled. If there's an attack in Ukraine, a bioweapons attack, well, of course, it's Russia that's going to make it look like Ukraine did it. But what about these bio labs? Let's come back to that for a moment. What about the Wuhan lab? What about all the funding? Why is America funding all of these labs around the world? It's like I said with the $1.5 trillion and the $14 billion going to Ukraine. What about America's cities? What about America's gas stations? What about America's borders? What about America's border security? What about all of the problems that we're just being besieged with? Well, America's under attack. And that's all part of the prophetic, that's all part of the turbocharged prophetic pace as well. So many significant events in amid all of this with respect to God's work. I mean, the focus, it can be a challenge sometimes because there's just so much evil. There's so much violence. It's straight out of Genesis 6. The heart, the mind of man, it's just on evil continually. And yet God says to his saints, keep your heart on the work. Keep your mind focused on the kingdom. Matthew 6 and verse 33. Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. There's the verse in Proverbs 29 that talks about having vision. And this is really why we're so keenly interested in our work in Jerusalem and constantly working to expand that work, because we have to set our hearts on Jerusalem, the city that God will choose, New Jerusalem even. You can read through the book of Hebrews and see how that these great patriarchs of old, they had their vision was not even on Jerusalem and the world tomorrow, but Jerusalem in and beyond the world tomorrow, New Jerusalem. And that's described in the book of Revelation. Read through the first 15, 20 verses of Hebrews 11. And then go and read about New Jerusalem in the last three chapters of the book of Revelation. That's a hope-filled vision. My father has a book on the subject of God choosing Jerusalem. This was from a Key of David program that he put together, I think, 2 years ago, from November of 2020. This is clip 7.
And what does it mean when God says that he, the Eternal, has chosen Jerusalem? Why has he chosen Jerusalem? He certainly isn't changing Jerusalem, and he isn't ruling Jerusalem today. So what is God really talking about here? Well, if you look at the scripture closely and the entire context here, you'll see that this is what God sees that is going to become of Jerusalem. He's chosen Jerusalem, and he's going to make it the most magnificent city this world has ever seen.
And that's what we see when we go to Jerusalem, like he brought out there. When you look at the city itself, it's pretty dirty. It's got a lot of stray cats. It's, you know, it's divided along the Jewish and Arabic lines. It's, of course, you have Christianity, of course, also looks to Jerusalem. A lot of people fight over the city of Jerusalem. In fact, if you look at the history of this city, there's just been rivers of blood coming through it. And there's Bible prophecies that speak of more blood flowing through Jerusalem. So why should we be so concerned about Jerusalem? Why would God choose this city? You look into the Bible, just to take one book alone, the book of Zechariah. I'll read you a couple of verses from there in just a second. But it's a fairly short book, 14 chapters. And Jerusalem, though, is mentioned 41 times in that book of prophecy. 41 times. If you think about some of the prophecies that had to be fulfilled, speaking of the pace, the turbocharged pace of Bible prophecy in these last days, I won't take the time to get into all of them, but suffice it to say, there had to be a Jewish state in these last days for certain prophecies to be fulfilled. And as we know, it's only been since 1948 that has been the case. In fact, there's other prophecies indicating that there had to be Jewish control over Jerusalem. I mean, for Zechariah 14 to be fulfilled, Zechariah 14, 1 and 2, the city to be divided in two, well, that tells you that at one point it had to be united. And of course, it was united after the 1967 war, when the Jews gained control of the city. But here is this city, as I say, it's the center for three major religions, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. And that's one reason why there's been so much blood flowing through the city, because religions, if you can believe it, have fought over this city. Zechariah 12 and verse 2, it says, "Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of trembling unto all the people round about when they shall be in the siege, both against Judah and against Jerusalem." This is God, through his prophet, basically saying that those who try to hold on to or control Jerusalem, it's going to bring them a cup of trembling. There's going to be a lot of violence and division to come with it. And that's been the history. This is from my father's booklet, Jerusalem in Prophecy. It says, every nation that has ruled Jerusalem has experienced serious problems. This is true up to the present day. It says, God said the Jerusalem problem would be a nightmare for peacemakers and diplomats who get entangled with it, not to mention the people who call it their home. And yet it seems that every nation wants Jerusalem. Every nation wants it. Every religion wants it. The media, there's a higher concentration of journalists in Jerusalem. There's more journalists in Jerusalem than in any spot on the earth. We just looked at a property the other day. Had this beautiful backdrop where you could see the old city. And the current occupant, he had all of his television gear in the apartment. I think it was Sky News. But there's representatives from news agencies all over the place in Jerusalem. Why should there be so much interest in this city? Why should God's church be so interested in this city? Well, look at verse 3 just for a moment. It says, and in that day will I make Jerusalem a burdensome stone for all people. All that burden themselves with it shall be cut in pieces. See, in these last days, Jerusalem's going to be a heavy burden to any nation or group of nations that gets involved in man's ways in this city. Now, for the church, it's different, but, and I'll get to that here in just a second. But if you look at Jeremiah 10 and verse 23, I mean, just what's happened in Jerusalem over the centuries, just what's happened in that city alone proves that man has been utterly incapable of directing his own steps, as the prophet Jeremiah said. Incapable. We're in Zechariah 12. Look at chapter 2 and verse 9. It says here, for behold, I will shake my hand upon them, and they shall be a spoil to their servants, and you shall know that the Lord of hosts has sent me. So this is another prophecy, and here God is telling this earth that you're going to know. I sent a message to you. You're going to know that I did a work. You think of that prophecy in Ezekiel 33. You know, by the time all these things are fulfilled, they're going to know that there was a prophet among them. Here in verse 10, this is Zechariah 2, it says, sing and rejoice, O daughter of Zion, for lo, I come and I will dwell in the midst of you, saith the Eternal, and many nations shall be joined to the Eternal in that day and shall be my people, and I will dwell in the midst of you, and you shall know that the Eternal of hosts has sent me unto you. You're going to know. See, even in the midst of all of this turmoil, even in the midst of this attack on our nations, the satanic attack to blot out even the name of Israel, the Israelite nations. Of course, I'm speaking more broadly of the United States, Britain. But the little nation that's called Israel today, that's actually the tribe of Judah. Herbert Armstrong, of course, spells all of this out in his wonderful, masterful book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. But God has a message for the nations of this earth. God has a message for the nations of Israel in particular. Verse 12 says, and the Eternal shall inherit Judah, his portion in the Holy Land, and shall choose Jerusalem again. See, God is going to choose Jerusalem again. Right now, I mean, it's not a city of peace. Never mind what its name means. If you look at what's actually happened there, it's been far from that. It's not been a city of peace, but soon it will be. Right now, Jerusalem is not the place which God has chosen, except that there is a work to be done, even in these last days before the return of Jesus Christ. And this is why we've had a presence in Jerusalem, really, not even since we started helping the late Dr. Elat Mazar back in 2006. But you go back to 1967, as I said, when Jerusalem gained control of the little nation of Judah, Israel, gained control of all of Jerusalem. And then the work that Benjamin Mazar began in earnest there at the Temple Mount excavations. And then Herbert Armstrong developing or establishing that Iron Bridge relationship with the people of Judah, with Benjamin Mazar, with the Israeli government. And every summer he was sending over 70, 80 excavators from Ambassador College. This is from a coworker letter that Herbert Armstrong wrote back in December of 1968. He's talking in this coworker letter about the dual-pronged commission of the church to preach the gospel around the world and to feed the flock and to prepare those in the church for teaching all of mankind, preparing the church to assist Jesus Christ as the bride of Christ for all eternity. But after they started in on their excavations with Benjamin Mazar, Mr. Armstrong realized, well, actually, there's even more that we need to do to prepare for the return of Jesus Christ. There's an additional component you could add to that dual commission of preaching the gospel message to this world and feeding the flock of God in the process. He says here, and something that even I did not realize until recently, we were also commissioned to do, is to clean up the filth and rubble in that area that was the original Jerusalem and City of David, actually several acres of ground. This is a major operation of excavation. See, as all those excavations that were going on the Ophel, there was just layer upon layer of basically ruin and waste and filth, and that needed to be cleaned up. And in the process of that, of course, you turn up all of these exciting finds that really verify the biblical account. We were just talking the other day out at the Ophel site when we were visiting it. Brent and Chris were both going through just some of the stunning discoveries that have happened there just over the past 10 years or so. 10, 12 years. And of course, you go back to 2006 when Dr. Mazar was starting in on the Palace of David excavations and the Jeukal, Bulla, and Gedaliah. I mean, that started it all. And of course, the Palace of David, this massive wall, and then what she discovered later about the stepstone structure and how that was actually built to support David's palace. And of course, the building and the construction just continued on through the reign of his son, Solomon, as he built his palace and then the temple on the Ophel. And this is where we've been excavating, going back to 1967. I mean, this is quite the legacy that we're involved with, that we're a part of. This is from that coworker letter again. Mr. Armstrong says, why is this important, these excavations, even cleaning up these sites? Why is it important? He says, because Christ has said he will yet choose Jerusalem and make it the capital city of the whole world tomorrow. It says Jesus is coming in all the supernatural power and glory to rule the world. His throne will be there. It says, do you not suppose it will be in the very spot he chose for David's throne? Jesus is to sit on David's throne. Where was David's throne? It was on this very spot where we are now cleaning up and hauling off the rubble of century after century of accumulation. It says here, and even David is to be resurrected. That's the spot we're cleaning up. So there's a physical preparing as well as spiritual in preparing for the way for Messiah's coming. It says finally, further, God says we are to shout with amplified power to the cities of Judah the glad message that the Messiah is soon coming. It says here, this is leading to the opportunity to do this. He's talking about Isaiah 40. And of course, we've referred you to Isaiah 40, verses 9 and 10 there. It's a double benefit. You're cleaning up the very spot that Jesus is going to establish his throne in the world tomorrow. And in the process, you're turning up all of these finds mentioned in the Bible, mentioned in the Old Testament. And it just gives you an opportunity to proclaim a message, to tell the cities of Judah, behold, your God. God has a plan and purpose for all of mankind, for every religion on this earth. And for 6,000 years, man has been going it alone, apart from God. He hasn't been taking from the tree of life. And so he's been directing his steps the way that he thinks we should go. And that's why we have all of these competing groups, nations, fighting, warring amongst one another. And religions. There's something for everyone. And yet look at the problems that they bring to this world. Look at the fighting. A lot of it motivated by religious people, by religious thinking. You go to Jerusalem and you hear the sounds of religion all over the place. It's everywhere in the city. And yet, as I say, that city, I mean, it's seen violence like no other city. Rivers of blood flowing through the city of Jerusalem. God has a plan to eliminate all of that and to establish his government, to establish his family government, his family rule on the very spot that we've been excavating. We excavated there at the Palace of David in 2006, 2007, 8, and 9. And then that's when we switched over to the Ophel as we moved north from David's palace into the area that Solomon developed. And this is why we've had such a close relationship with Dr. Eilat Mazar right up until her death last year. And she handed over a lot of her archaeological responsibilities to one of her colleagues at the Hebrew University. His name's Professor Garfinkel, and we were able to meet with him this past week in Jerusalem, and he's very excited to resume excavations on the Ophel with this little church of all organizations and groups taking a lead role in that work. It's an exciting opportunity for God's people, for the students at God's College, as I said yesterday in that short interview with Brent Noctegal. Hopefully we can kick off another phase of excavating as soon as this summer. There's still some work to be done, and we're in the process too of establishing an institute where we can provide a home for the Mazar Library, some 4,000 volumes, as Brent was saying on this program yesterday. So that's why we were looking at properties over the last few days. And of course, we're looking at property too, just to have a place where we can put our students so that they can excavate day in and day out. Jeremiah 3, verse 16, it says, "And it shall come to pass, when you be multiplied and increased in the land, in those days, saith the Eternal, they shall say no more, the Ark of the Covenant of the Eternal, neither shall it come to mind, neither shall they remember it, neither shall they visit it, neither shall that be done away or done anymore." It says, "At that time they shall call Jerusalem the throne of the Eternal, and all nations shall be gathered unto it," it says, "to the name of the Lord, to Jerusalem, neither shall they walk any more after the imagination of their evil heart." This leads right into the wonderful world tomorrow. You see why we're so keenly interested in the city of Jerusalem. It's because of the work that God has to do in this city. And it starts on this one spot, just a few acres, like Mr. Armstrong said. But it's to grow and to expand from there all over the earth. God is going to establish his headquarters in the city that David and Solomon built. And as I say, you can look at other prophecies like Isaiah 2 and Micah 4, where it says that all nations are going to be flowing into Jerusalem. One last quote here. It says, "God is now preparing his bride to rule over and to unite the nations of Israel. Then Israel will be used to lead the world, all the nations, to God." It says, "After that, David's throne will rule over the whole universe." That's why we have a work in Jerusalem. This truly is the city that God will choose. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining us on today's show. We appreciate you joining us all week, and we'll see you again next week.